Doesn't have to be great. We're just brainstorming here. Anything that would bring you towards your goal. All right, almost there. Try to think of one more action if you can. All right, if you need more time, go ahead and pause the audio now. Otherwise, we'll move on. Now, I want you to think about the pain that you associate with these actions. Some of these may be individual, such as the physical pain that you would receive after a workout, or the pain of eating healthy foods which you don't enjoy the taste of, or the sources of pain may be related to your desired outcome, so they would apply across all of your actions. Meaning, maybe if you have a fear that if you get in shape, you'll become more superficial of a person, or you'll become a less nice of a person if you're in better shape. So think of those actions, both individual and the overriding ones that apply to all the actions, and think of what is stopping you from taking those actions, right? What's holding you back? What is the pain that you're associating to these actions? Because remember, if you were not associating some sort of pain to these actions, if it was only pleasure, you'd already be doing it full on. So go ahead and think about those negative associations now. Now, on this one, you may need a bit more than a minute. I'm going to give you a minute, but if you need a little bit more time, just go ahead and pause the audio when I come back, okay? And take as many moments as you need to reflect. But go ahead and I'll give you that moment now. So just think, what pain do you associate with that action? Otherwise, you'd be doing it. Maybe it's obvious. Maybe the pain is buried deep down. Almost there. What's stopping you from taking action? Okay, if you want a bit more time, go ahead, pause that audio now. Otherwise, we're going to go ahead and get going on to the next one. All right, guys, so what did you come up with? Are you a little bit more clear now on the negative associations that you have to those actions? Are you starting to see how that pain may be inhibiting you from taking action? Awareness is key. You have to be aware of the pain and the pleasure. Now, I want you to do the opposite next. I want you to think of the pleasure that you would receive from following through on these actions. So if your goal is to increase the love in your relationship, what pleasure would you derive from learning to communicate better with your partner? What pleasure would you derive from giving your partner a full body massage or watching that television program that they love but you don't like? Right? You'll enjoy that you're making them happy. So once again, I'll go ahead and I'll give you a minute. And this time I want you to focus on that pleasure that you will receive and really try to feel that happiness, feel that satisfaction of accomplishing whatever your desires are. Okay? Go ahead and start focusing on that pleasure now. How would that make you feel to follow through on your desires? How awesome would that feel? Are you starting to see how these actions would bring positivity into your life? Almost there, and just feel those positive vibes running through your body. All right, if you need a little bit more time, go ahead and pause the audio now. Were you able to see the positive effects that these decisions would have on your life? Can you now see how you associate both pain and pleasure to these actions, which may help explain why it's a little more difficult to follow through with them than you maybe anticipated? Now, I want you to focus back on that pain. See, look, you need to be able to control your focus in a second's notice. Right now, you are in a non-emotionally charged state, and you're just practicing controlling your focus. But you need to let those muscles grow. You have to practice and get stronger and better at it so you can just, boom, control your state, boom, control your state, boom, control your state. So that way, if you're out in real life and something negative happens, you can just bring yourself out of that negative state and refocus. What you focus on, that's where your state's going to go. If you're focusing on something positive, if you're focusing on pleasure, you're going to feel that pleasure. If you're focusing on pain, focusing on the negativity, that's what you're going to feel. So you need to be able to control this, all right? So right now, I want you to focus back on what you would lose if you do not follow through on these actions. What is the cost to you? Now, I'm not so much talking like today or tomorrow. You can think about that too, but I'm talking a little bit more long-term, years from now, a year from now, 3 years from now, 5, 10 years from now, right? 20, 30 years from now, what are you going to lose? How will that failure of you to achieve your goals affect your life? If your goal is to increase your financial freedom, then what is that going to cost you if you don't? You want to think of bad scenarios here, worst case scenarios, because you can use that as motivation to run away from your pain, just like I imagine those doomsday situations to help push me towards financial freedom. So if you don't make more money, you won't be able to support a family, right? Whether you have one now or maybe you'll have one in the future. Right, you're not going to be able to support that family if you don't achieve a higher degree of financial freedom. Your child won't have all of the opportunities he or she deserves. If you're single, you won't be able to find an amazing man or woman because they'll go find other more successful men or women. Okay, if you are married, your wife will either leave you or be extremely unhappy and unsatisfied that she got stuck with you. Because you're not a good provider. Or maybe you or a family member would get deathly ill and in need of very expensive treatment that your insurance isn't going to cover, okay? Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of treatment, and you don't have the money to pay for it. And you or a close friend or family member has to die because you didn't build that financial fortress so that anything that happens, you have the money to take care of you, your friends, and your family. Even on the more realistic side, what happens if Social Security fails? The stock market collapses? Your retirement, it's gone. Do you still have the means to support yourself for decades on end? So for whatever your goals are, I want you to take a minute and think of worst case scenarios. What's going to happen years in the future if you fail to accomplish your goal? Okay, go ahead. I'll give you a minute. Do that now. Remember, what's the worst case scenario? If things went really bad. How could this ruin your life? Almost there. Focus on that pain of you failing to achieve your goals. All right, go ahead and pause that audio now if you need a little bit more time. Otherwise, were you able to bring some of that future pain to the present? Were you able to make it a little bit more real today? So now you know what controls your decisions, and that is what you link pain and pleasure to. You also know an area of your life that you want to change, and you know some actions that you need to take in order to change it. You now know the pain you associate to those actions, as well as the pleasure you associate to those actions, and you know the long-term cost of not following through. So we're nearing the end of today's program. Your task for today is to choose two more actions, and then go out and take the first step to achieving success in those actions. This is similar as yesterday. You can choose the same actions, but if you do, I want you to up the ante a little bit, okay? So if you said, hey, I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna run, 2 miles, and you did that yesterday, make it 2.1 miles. All right. Or if you said, I'm going to eat one healthy meal, make it two healthy meals, or make it one healthy meal and put a restriction on your caloric intake for the day. Okay. So if you're trying to just say, hey, I want to have a better body, obviously there's a couple things we're focusing on here. It's okay if you do something similar to yesterday, but do it a little bit more. Or if you can think of two different things, that's even better. Go ahead, say, hey, what else can I do? Get a little creative. What other actions can I take that will push me towards my goals? And remember, this is a today goal. This is not a tomorrow goal. It's not a next week goal. It's not a let's make plans so I can do stuff in the future. No, this is a today goal. Today. So now if you don't finish it today, that's okay. All right. If you have a larger goal, but I at least want you to chunk that down so there is a part of it that you can accomplish tonight. I don't care if you're listening to this right before you go to bed. You have to do something. You have to take the momentum from this program and push it forward. Do not just go to bed. Do not just, continue on with your day and forget about it. You have to do this now. Okay. Or at least before the end of the day. I mean, if you're, listening to this while you're driving into work or something, that's fine. But before the end of today, you have to do these two things. Okay? So go ahead, write those two things down, get it done. Put it to use. Okay? Do not waste the time. Look, if you just took this hour listening to this program and you don't actually take any actions, this was a waste of time. Listening to this is a waste of time. You just wasted your time if you don't actually take an action. You have to take action. You have to make it real. You actually have to go out and make it happen in the real world. Thinking about it isn't going to change anything in your life. So you got the motivation. You got some techniques. You got a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more information. Now is the time. Today is the time to go out and apply it and affect change in the real world. Go out, do it, and remember, live by design. Welcome to day 3 of Live by Design. On day 1, we learned about the power of focus as well as the psychology method. Yesterday, we talked about the dual opposing forces of pain and pleasure, and then you picked 2 actions to take. Now, did you do those actions? Did you follow through yesterday? If not, pause this audio, go back to yesterday, and complete the actions that you set out to achieve. If you did take your actions, congratulations. You're doing awesome. I am so proud of you, and you are taking the steps necessary to change your life. Today, we're going to take the next steps in increasing our conscious focus on certain pain and pleasure in order to begin reprogramming our brain. Today, we are going to talk about NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming. So, first things first, what is neuro-linguistic programming? Well, let's break that phrase down a bit. Neuro is for your brain, linguistic is language, and programming, well, is programming, you know what that means. So, super advanced stuff, I know, right? So look, we have brain, language, programming. NLP is essentially the language of our brain and how to reprogram it. The brain doesn't always think logically or rationally. Remember, this computer is a million years old and it was originally intended for running away from mastodons. This computer we're working with today is the same computer we were working with when cutting-edge technology was slamming one rock against another rock to form an arrow tip. This was back when we used to take the skin off of dead animals and wear it. Oh wait, we still do that. Okay, so maybe our brain really hasn't changed that much. Guys, our world is a little bit different nowadays in a lot of ways. That is why we need to control our brain and live by design. NLP helps us understand the language of our brain and gives us the ability to rewrite its code. So let's look back to pain and pleasure. Let's say you are thinking about going to the gym, and you have some positive associations such as a feeling of accomplishment and satisfaction that you are doing something healthy, but you also have some negative associations like it will create physical pain in your body, and it will force you to come face to face with just how out of shape you are. Now, if you decide to go to the gym, which associations were stronger? Your associations to the pleasure were stronger, at least at that moment in time. If you decided to not go, however, then your associations were stronger to the pain. And of course, these associations and our levels of pain and pleasure to them can change from day to day and even moment to moment. With NLP, we can manually strengthen and weaken our associations of pain and pleasure both in the short term and the long term, so we have more conscious control over our decisions. The next step is we need to realize that these associations are not anything that exists in the real world. These associations are merely our own personal interpretations of meaning. What do I mean? Well, if you go to the gym and work out and get really exhausted and then wake up the next day and are sore, as many people do, you may associate that to pain. But that pain, is that reality or is that merely just your interpretation of reality? After all, aren't there people who go to the gym every single day and literally love that feeling of exhaustion because they interpret that as a successful workout? If you speak to virtually any bodybuilder, he will tell you that the entire purpose of the workout is so you are sore the next day, because that means the muscle successfully achieved the micro tears, which then enables the muscle to build itself back up larger and stronger. A bodybuilder will be dissatisfied if he does not feel that soreness in his muscle the next day. So, is the reality of the situation different for these people? No, the reality is both people went to the gym, both people worked out, and both were sore the next day. The only difference is in your head. The only difference was how the individual interpreted the events which happened. One person assigned pain to the event, while the other person assigned pleasure to the event. This applies to literally every scenario in our life. Sometimes I like to illustrate with an extreme example, an extreme situation, so you can really see how this can hold true even in the most unlikely of circumstances. Two of the most powerful evolutionary traits which we have developed is the desire to live as well as the desire to flee from physical pain. Both of these traits make pretty obvious evolutionary sense. Don't die. And yet there are some people who take their own life, and there are some people who find pleasure in physical pain. The BDSM or kink community is a notable example, with a significant portion of its members deriving pleasure from various amounts of pain. While most people have negative associations to this, these people have at some point linked up one way or another pleasure to being whipped or slapped or even cut with a knife. An extreme example, and I don't want to tie this in with the BDSM or kink community, this is a very extreme example, but something which illustrates just how far a person can change their associations to pain and pleasure was, and I apologize, if this may be a little gruesome to you, so I'll leave out most of the details. But there was an individual, and I'm totally going to say this name wrong, but by the name of Bernd Jürgen Armando Brandes, who in a 100% consensual manner agreed to being killed. Now, I don't mean this was some old guy or someone with a terminal illness. I mean, this was a normal human being who agreed to being killed. This wasn't a guy who was suffering from severe depression. It wasn't like he hung himself. This man actually derived pleasure from, and once again, I'm going to leave out some of the details, but there were some other things going on during the slow murder, which was kind of the victim was enjoying, right? Because he had some really weird associations going on in his head, and even in the midst of being slowly killed, he was still deriving pleasure from that. The point is, if someone can change their associations to two of the most fundamental sources of pain that we have built into our genetic code over millions of years, in that of avoiding physical pain and death, something that is so much of a core in the genetic code that even animals have it, even animals don't want to die. If you start beating a dog, it's gonna run away. If you start trying to shine a bright light onto an ant, it's gonna try and run away. If you try and kill a spider, it's gonna run away. Things don't want to experience pain, and things don't want to die. This is the most basic code that we have in our genetics, and if that can be overridden, you don't think that you can change your association so you can maybe lose 10 pounds? Or that you can start making a little bit more money? You just need to take conscious control over these associations so you can have them changed at the unconscious level. That is how you live by design. You bring the unconscious to the conscious and then alter it so your unconscious reactions, your new instincts are helping, not hindering you. This is where your nervous system comes into play. What do I mean? I mean, you need to change the way that your physical body reacts to certain stimulus. The infamous Pavlov's dogs experiment is an example everyone is aware of. See, at first, when you ring the bell, it won't cause any reaction in the dog's nervous system. The bell doesn't mean anything to the dog. But after you condition the dog to associate the ringing bell to food, the dog's nervous system begins to react differently. The dog begins to salivate. You can see this nervous system reaction in yourself. Have you ever been about to consume a very sour substance, something like lemon juice or very sour candy, and even before you put it in your mouth, you already started to salivate or scrunch your face up as if you already tasted it? That's your nervous system automatically responding to a thought. And just like you have response to this, you have other physical and mental responses to every thought. You just might not be aware of it. If someone even brings up going to the gym, you may have an automatic negative reaction to that. It may be so tiny that you aren't even aware of it. This is similar to a micro reaction. Have you ever seen a video of someone who gives a very quick negative facial reaction to something? It's a fraction of a second, almost too quick to even register in real time. But when you play it back and you pause the video, you can clearly see that negative face being made. This is a micro expression, and our nervous system has reactions just like this. You'll think of a certain subject which you have a positive or negative association to, and then you'll have a micro reaction to it, a fraction of a second where your brain and or body gives a positive or negative response. If you have a negative association to what you are trying to accomplish, you must first change that negative association, and then taking action will be 10 times easier because you'll have the wind at your back instead of pushing against a brick wall. Now our goal for today is to become more conscious of some of these programs which are running in the background of our mind, particularly in the areas of our life which we are trying to affect change. If we can change these programs, we will begin to see a massive shift in our ability to progress in these areas, and it will seem almost effortless because it's not just about working hard, it's about changing our brains so we actually get pleasure from the work and we enjoy the process. It's no longer work. It's something that we do because we enjoy it. There is no hard or not hard in reality. Just like some people, it's hard for them to go to the gym, but then there's other people where that literally relaxes them. They'll go have a hard day at work and they come to the gym to relax and relieve stress. There is no such thing as hard and not hard. It's just our associations. So for some of us, we may have been told in the past, or we somehow linked up, that working hard, right, working long hours at a job and really putting your time and effort into something, that's hard. And that ultimate pleasure was doing nothing. So we've been living with that concept. Once we change that idea, making progress becomes easy. But first, you need to believe that it is possible to control your own associations. So many people believe they are just passengers in life. You need to realize that you can control your own mind. You can create your own meaning and associations. Let me show you how easy and quick this is. When I say, live by, what's the next word that you think of? For most of you out there, it's going to be the word design. And this is only day 3. and you've already linked up the words live by and design. And just wait, in a few more days from now, you're gonna hear that motivational music coming on, you're gonna be like, woo, yeah, you're gonna be psyching yourself up, you're gonna be ready for work. The music is gonna become an anchor. Your mind is going to associate that music to learning and being inspired and taking action. Guys and gals, this is nothing new and it's nothing unique. We are bombarded with these associations on a daily basis. If you're at the gym and you see a t-shirt with a big swoosh on it and the words that say, just do it, what brand are you thinking of right now? Nike. Can you complete this this jingle for me? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it. What's this company?
The Ultimate Driving Machine.
We all know it, it's BMW. All of these associations have been injected into our brain via repetition. Now, from time to time, these associations can change. We just need a newer or stronger association to override the old one. For example, has there ever been a hairstyle or some fashion which, when you first saw it, you were like, yeah, no thank you, but then you saw a couple famous people who were doing it, and maybe some of the cool kids started doing it, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, it's not really that bad. I kind of like it a little bit. Or maybe you somehow pretended like you were the, like, oh yes, I'm the fashion queen, I like this first. But still, you didn't invent it, you saw it from someone. You saw it from someone that you respected or that you liked and you looked up to, and then you adopted it and brought it into your own life. On a more serious note, the United States population approval rating for gay marriage in 2009 was 37%. And by 2015, it was 55%. That's only 6 years, guys. That's not long enough to be a completely different generation of voters. These are mostly the same voters. But there was a change in associations. And whether you personally are in support of or against gay marriage, I mean, that's not what we're talking about here, but you have to admit that the population responds very differently to open gayness and gay shaming today than how they did a decade or two ago. For example, some of you more aged folks or Grey's Anatomy fans may recall what the original name for AIDS was. GRID. Gay-related immune deficiency. That would never happen today. Could you even imagine the scientific community coming out and saying, we're gonna call this the gay disease? The public uproar that would ensue if that happened today. Could you even imagine? This is the power of changing associations. I just want you to understand that you can both create and change the associations. It's really not that hard. You just need to know how to do it. So let's take a look at some of your current associations. What are your associations to your health? To exercise, to diet, to drugs. Drugs, that's an interesting one. Why is it that some people get hooked on drugs? Why do some people get hooked on cocaine and heroin, painkillers, while others do not? When you look at it in the short term, doesn't it actually seem to be all positive? I mean, taking drugs, doesn't it really seem to actually be a good thing in the short term? What do most types of drugs do? They immediately stop the pain and give you pleasure. All you need to do is snort some coke and all of your life's problems just wash away. Perhaps not the reality of them, but of course we've already realized that reality is just perception. So if the perception of your problems are gone, to an extent, aren't your problems gone? I mean, it's a little bit of circular logic, but that's the truth of the matter, is if you don't care about the problems, they're not really problems. That doesn't mean that it's not going to affect the world or affect your family or friends, but if you genuinely do not care about it, and you're not going to care about it in the future. See, that's where there's a little bit of a catch. But if you've just decided, hey, I'm not going to care about money anymore, you don't actually have a problem anymore. Now, there may be other things that, you know, come into issue, but those are only going to be problems if you decide that they're problems. So you snort some coke or whatever, boom, your problems are gone. Things are good. Having a good time, enjoying yourself, got them endorphins rushing throughout your body, got that serotonin flowing, everything's good when you snort some crack, right? So why is it that not everybody snorts crack? Simple. Those of us who are not on crack do care about our problems. We do care about having money. We do care about having a place to live. We do care about not screwing up our friends and family's life. We do care about having all of our teeth and our health. So when we do care about these things, when we see the long-term results of the drug use, that's when we can begin to deny ourselves the immediate gratification of the drug use. Because what's the general process that happens when a person uses drugs, right? Maybe they'll start using them and nothing all that bad happens at first. It's all good at first, right? But then because they enjoy being in that altered state so much and they enjoy that more and more and more and they want to spend more of their time in that altered state, they don't want to spend time in the real world. So they start missing out on work and they're getting high, or they're getting high at work and then they're getting fired, and then they're spending all of their money on drugs, all of their time doing the drugs. They've lost their source of income, then they can't afford the drugs. They care less and less about reality. They can't live life like a normal human being because all they care about is getting that fix, getting back to that temporary state of euphoria. Then the chemicals begin to slowly and sometimes permanently eat away at the brain's ability to process serotonin. And I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's going wrong, but that's the only one that I'm personally aware of. The person then can't feel happiness from normal life like a normal person. They have to up their substance levels, their drug levels, in order to achieve that same effect which they initially had, which then increases the rate of destruction to their brain. The user's body begins to weaken and break down at an accelerated rate. They become a shell of what they once were. So what is the difference between those who use and those who do not use? The associations we have. Let me ask you a question. Okay, don't think too hard, too long about it. Just Occam's razor type situation. Who do you think is more likely to use drugs? A person who associates pain or pleasure with the idea of getting old and living a long, healthy life? Obviously, at least obviously to me, those who associate pleasure with living a long, healthy life and look forward to that are going to be far less likely to do something which would impact their health down the road. Have you ever met someone who said, you know, usually this is like teenagers or people in their 20s, and they're like out partying every night, and they're like, I just want to do drugs, I just want to have fun, and live my life, and, you know, when I get old, when I'm like in my 50s or 60s, just kill me. I've heard a lot of people say that. A lot of young people. And first of all, 50 is not that old. I bet if you ask like the vast majority of 50-year-olds, they're not going to think they're that old and they don't want to die, that's for sure. But when you're like 18 or 21, you know, people, oh wow, 50, that's so old. But like, yeah, no, dude, 50 is not that old, okay? So, and trust me, when you're 50 years old, you're not going to be wishing that you're dead. You were going to be wishing that you were partying less when you were 21. All right, how about this one? Who is more likely to use drugs? A person who associates pain or pleasure to being in control of their own life. Obviously, people who associate pain to control are going to be more likely to use drugs to escape their problems. We're also going to have some personal associations to, kind of being in that altered state, which may not apply to everyone, but they'll apply maybe just to you. Now, I don't know what your personal associations are, but I'll tell you about a couple of mine, and maybe by listening to mine, you can realize what some of your individual associations are. So when I was 17 years old, I drank alcohol for the first two times in my life. Both nights I got drunk. I was drinking a fifth of vodka with my friend, and I had a pretty fun night. Nothing bad happened. We were just kind of chilling at his house, went in the jacuzzi, played some poker. It was all pretty chill. It was a really fun two nights. Fast forward about a year, and I drank for the third time, and this time it was also still a positive experience, and then I did that shortly after, and this was the fourth time. This time went a little bit differently. I was mixing alcohols, and apparently I mixed the wrong stuff. I don't know what it is, but whatever it was, it did not turn out well. I went to bed not feeling well. I woke up maybe an hour or two later, and I threw up. Now, here's some little tidbit about me. I hate throwing up, like with a passion. I hate throwing up so much. So by that point, I was already like kind of done with it. But I went back to the couch. And I, as I was falling asleep, I was staring at the door. Now, here's something that was relevant to me at the time. I had just started taking jiu-jitsu classes for about 8 or 9 months, and I had just gotten to the point to where I felt like I could, for the most part, defend myself against a single unarmed attacker in most situations. I was working really hard in jiu-jitsu, and it was really important to me. That skill set was really important to me at that point in my life. It was a big source of pride for me. So as I laid there, drunk and sick, I stared at the door and I asked myself a question. If someone broke into this house right now and attacked me, could I defend myself? The answer was a resounding no. I wouldn't be able to defend myself against my ex-girlfriend who's 4'10" trying to hit me with a pair of her heels, let alone fend off an actual attacker. So I fell back asleep, and then about 2 hours later, I woke up again and threw up again. And as I was throwing up in the toilet, I was like, this is not fun. Why do people do this? This is like total bullcrap. I'm not gonna do this again. And I didn't do it again. That was it. I woke up the next day. I'm like, that was a horrible night. I did not have fun. I did not enjoy myself. And the amount of pain that I went through that one night by far overrided the amount of pleasure that I received from getting drunk the other three nights. Because you have to remember, let's say that if I was sober on those three nights, the amount of fun that I would have had those nights maybe would have been an 8 out of 10. But because I got drunk, maybe the level of fun was like an 8.5 or an 8.75 out of 10. It was a little bit better, but it wasn't a huge difference. But on that fourth night, my level of fun would have been an 8 out of 10 if I was sober, but it was more like a negative 2 out of 10 when I got sick and was throwing up, and also realized that I couldn't defend myself, which was something against this hypothetical attacker that doesn't exist, but just asking myself that question also really affected me a lot, because at that point in my life, my ability to defend myself was really important to me. So that was it. I developed such a negative association to drinking that night. I've never been drunk a single time since then in my entire life, nor have I ever once even had the desire to get drunk. every once in a while, I don't even drink. I mean, every once in a while I'll have like a glass of wine with a girl, or, you know, I'll have like a beer if I'm out with some guys, but that's it. My brain was completely rewired that night, and I just don't have a desire to drink any longer. Now, did I work for that change? Did I try really hard? No, I put zero effort into that. But it was my associations that got changed. And therefore, in reality, I was able to change my actions. Of course, this wasn't something of conscious choice. I unfortunately didn't have that much control over my life at this point. But I was able to change my actual actions by changing my associations. So now what we need to do is take conscious control over our ability to change these associations, and then we can change our actions, and it's not hard. So if we can go from drinking to not drinking just because our associations change, it's not because we worked hard or we're resisting the desire and resisting the urge to drink. We can do the same thing with making money. We can do the same thing with working hard at our business, or leaving what we're doing and becoming self-employed, or going to the gym, losing weight, being devoted in a relationship. Whatever it is that you want, you can make that change. We just have to change our associations. And then it's not this big hard thing that we have to work so hard to do, and we're fighting against this, pushing against this brick wall. No. Where our brain is gonna make us do what we wanna do because we've changed our associations. So, how do we do this? Well, in order to solve this, we have to look at where these associations will take us down the line if we don't change them. Just how the addict cares more about the immediate gratification of escape right now than he does about the damage it will do in the future. You may be doing a similar thing where you are giving in to the temporary gratification or temporarily reducing your levels of stress, but what will be the ramifications long term? If you continue to look at food as a source of comfort instead of a source of fuel and energy, what will be the result 20 years from now? How will your body look and function after an extra 20 years of accumulative damage having been placed on it? If you want to start a business or become a professional at something, but you are too scared to go for it, what will be the result in 20 years? How will you feel to know that you had an idea, and then 20 years from now, it's too late? Especially if it involves your physical body, something like being an athlete. Your dream is to become a professional football player, or a tennis player, or even a dancer. But then the years go by, and it's too late. Your body is too old. You're just not capable of doing it on the same level which you once dreamed of. Some of you may already be at that point where there was something that you wanted to do, whether it was physical or not, there was something you wanted to do, and you didn't act. You missed out on it. And if that is so, you should have even more motivation. That you should use that as a reason to never let anything slip away ever again. If you lost an opportunity to do something you've always wanted to do because you didn't give it everything you had, you were holding back, for whatever reason that may be, it doesn't matter what the reason is, but you were holding back, then now you need to realize that you can never do that again. You screwed up. You messed up. Don't forget the pain. Don't push it away. Don't try and minimize it by eating or smoking or doing drugs or drinking. Feel that pain. Remember it. Embrace it and use it. Use it as motivation to push yourself forward, but you need an even bigger goal. You see, you can't have grandiose goals in the past and then you think you're gonna be motivated to do some small crap. No, you need to have an even bigger vision. So stop for a moment. If you don't really have a vision and you gotta say, hey, where am I gonna go that's even bigger than where I was gonna go before? Know this. You are always creating neuroassociations, whether you are doing so consciously or not, and whether you want to or not. For example, have you ever heard an old song and all of a sudden you start remembering maybe a past relationship or a place you used to live or a vacation or a party? Maybe you remember the day you saw that band live. Just like how Pavlov would associate the bell to the food for the dogs, your brain automatically links up the memory of a person or a place to a song. That's what we call an anchor. In NLP, an anchor is a technique we use to induce a certain emotion or state, such as relaxation, focused, or energized. It usually involves an external stimulus, such as a sound, touch, or smell, which will then induce the desired state. So that song is inducing a memory of your ex, which will in turn induce a state of happiness or unhappiness, depending upon your memory of your ex. Have you ever revisited a place that you haven't been to in many years? Maybe it was the place you took your partner to, you know, maybe for your first date, or the place you got engaged at, or the place you broke up at, or maybe you're revisiting your childhood neighborhood, and the second you get there, those memories just snap back. You don't even have to think about it consciously. You're not like, I'm gonna try and remember stuff. It just comes back to you. That's why athletes sometimes do weird things like take an exact number of practice swings or bounce a ball an exact number of times. Have you ever noticed that Michael Phelps will slap his arms across his back exactly 3 times before the race every single time? I don't even need to reference a specific race. Just search Phelps and you'll find it. 3 times every time. Now, we've gone over a few associations, like the McDonald's jingle or the BMW slogan, but do most of these associations really affect us in our daily lives? Not that much. You know, to a degree, if we're looking for some cheap fast food and don't care about our health, or if we're looking for a sporty sedan, but this is less due to the anchoring and more due to the mere exposure effect, aka the familiarity principle, which states that people tend to develop a preference for things merely because they are familiar with them. So if you've remembered a jingle, that's just one more advantage over the competition, and it helps you be even more familiar with that product. It will instill a sense of familiarity with that product, which will in turn give you a little bit of a bias towards that product. When anchoring really starts to matter is when we create that anchor, but it is also backed by strong emotions. Here's an example I'm sure you've seen somebody do, or maybe you've even done it yourself. Have you ever told someone that they're chewing with their mouth open, or maybe someone told that to you, and then the person who is chewing with their mouth open stares at you and performs a few loud, obnoxious, open mouth chews? This is anchoring, which is a bit more embedded than just a jingle that we remember. And this is because this anchor actually causes the person to act in an uncharacteristic way. When people are normally told to chew with their mouth closed, they are normally young children who have a very difficult time continuing to do so, because in reality, chewing with your mouth open is a natural habit. It's not natural for us to chew with our mouth closed. For most of us, this has become so ingrained into our being that it becomes second nature, and we forget that it actually is something unnatural. If you have any doubts, all you need to do is look at children. They are raw humans and they chew with their mouth open, the most natural way to do it. The only reason that we chew with our mouth closed is because somebody told us to chew with our mouth closed and wouldn't let us eat unless we continued to chew with our mouth closed. You can also look at most animals. Does your dog chew with his mouth closed? Does your cat chew with his mouth closed? When you go out on the African safari, do you see lions chewing with their mouth closed? No. So it's obvious that you're supposed to chew with your mouth open, and therefore it's frustrating for small children to chew in this unnatural way. So what did children want to do? They want to defy their parents. He wants to chew with his mouth wide open, smacking his food at his parent in rebellion. This is the only form of independence that a child can really attempt to assert on the situation. So fast forward 3 decades, and a mature adult can still be reduced to a little child trying to defy his parents and assert his independence. This demonstrates how an anchor can actually change our actions. But this particular example is relatively inconsequential, except maybe you'll turn off your date. Where you need to be careful is when these anchors are not about chewing with your mouth open, but not allowing yourself to fall deeply in love because you were hurt in the past, or not allowing yourself to take a risk on a dream of yours due to a past failure. If you don't consciously watch the anchors which are arising, they can begin to create negativity in your life. Have you ever had a bad day at work? I know what you're thinking. Whoa, Knight Rider, slow down there with all these advanced crazy ideas. Of course we've all had bad days at work. Now, men in particular. Because men and women, they respond a little bit differently. So if you're a guy, I think you'll get what I'm saying. And if you're a lady, then you'll probably relate to a guy having done this to you some point in the past. So, guys, have you ever had a tough day at work and you come home and just want to sit down and watch some TV or maybe be on the computer, play video games, you know, whatever it is that relaxes you. But then your girl comes over and she's like, "How was your day, honey?" And you're just like, "Oh my God, leave me alone." And what comes out of your mouth is usually like a lethargic, "Okay." And you kind of just ignore, you just want her to go away. And then maybe this happens for a few more days in a row, right? You have a bad day, you come home, you're upset. So what's happening? Okay. You have a bad day, you're in a bad state, and then you see your girl. You're in a bad state, and then you see your girl. You're in a bad state, right? You're feeling upset, you're unhappy, and then you see your girl. You do that over and over and over until one day, maybe you don't have a bad day at work. Maybe you're in a neutral state or even a little bit of a good state. Okay, obviously we're not in some super, it's not like you got some huge promotion because that would be enough to break the pattern, but you're just not in that same negative state. But you come home, you turn on the TV or the game console, whatever it is, you're feeling okay, and then she comes in with her annoying questions that she's always asking. "How was your day, honey?" And all of the sudden, how do you feel? Do you get annoyed and just want to be left alone like you were having a bad day? See, she didn't do anything bad. She didn't do anything. You didn't do anything bad. Nothing happened. Literally nothing negative happened at all between you guys. All that happened was you in the past had kept seeing her while you were in a negative state. And what does that do? It creates an association. And after a while, seeing that woman who used to give us so much joy and happiness is now an anchor for pain. Of course, you don't consciously realize this, but at the unconscious level, she is an anchor for all of that negativity that you have been experiencing at work. And that's why you can come home and not have had a bad day, maybe had a neutral day, and you're kind of feeling okay. But then she comes in and you're just like, "Ah, I just want to be left alone. Don't really want to deal with her right now." Because all those other times you were associating your brain, not you, right? You weren't consciously doing it. It's that million year old computer was continuously associating, okay, bad day at work, this woman, bad day at work, this woman, bad day at work, this woman. All right. Now, can you change this? Of course you can. Why else would we be listening to this program? Now, I'm going to tell you exactly how to change this tomorrow. But, you know, I mean, hey, listen, I gotta get you to come back somehow day after day. But listen, what you need to understand today is that our mind is always creating associations. All day, every day, whether you consciously or unconsciously do it. And most of the time, these associations are totally useless. Like, have you or someone you know ever looked up at the clouds or the night sky and you start looking for shapes? Right? They're like, oh, that clown looks like a pony, or those stars look like the goddess Athena. I mean, when you take a step back, like, isn't that a little silly, right? But that's how strong the desire is in our brain to create associations. Now, most of the time, like I said, these associations are indifferent to us. But sometimes,